For John Lewis, slavery wasn't an abstraction. It was as real to him as his great-grandfather, Frank Carter, who lived until his great-grandson was 7. Light-skinned, hard-working, and self-confident, Carter, whom Lewis called Grandpapa, had been born into enslavement in Pike County, Alabama in 1862. The family has long believed that a white man was likely Frank Carter's father. Carter and his own son, whose name was Dink, were, Lewis recalled, light, very fair. And their hair was different, what we would call good hair. But the subject was shrouded in secrecy and silence. This much is clear. The trajectory of the infant Frank Carter's life was fundamentally changed on Thursday, January 1st, 1863, when President Lincoln declared the enslaved in the seceded Confederate States of America were now free, and by the ratification in December 1865 of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which abolished slavery within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Coming of age in Reconstruction and under Jim Crow, Carter was driven and skilled in the world available to him. Yet the new birth of freedom, of which Lincoln had spoken at Gettysburg in 1863, had failed to come fully into being after the Confederate surrender at Appomattox in 1865. Within 8 months of the war's end, Alabama's legislature had instituted a Black Code to curtail the rights of African Americans and give the old ways new form and new force. In 1866, the federal government, driven by Republicans in Congress, sought to bring interracial democracy to the South. The reactionary Black Code was repealed. New constitutions were written. Black people were by and large allowed to vote, and African American candidates were elected to federal, state, and local office. White reaction was fierce. The Ku Klux Klan was founded in these postbellum years. A Confederate general named Edmund Pettus was a grand dragon. And by 1901, when Frank Carter was nearly 40, white Alabama had reverted as much as it could to an antebellum order by legalizing segregation, circumscribing suffrage, and banning interracial marriage. At the dawn of a new century, then, the old color line had been redrawn and reinforced. Alabama's 1901 Constitution establishing white supremacy had been debated in Montgomery from May to September of that year, ending in time for the cotton harvest. 50 miles away from the state capital, Frank Carter leased his land from J.S. Big Josh Copeland, a major figure in Troy, the Pike County seat. Carter worked his way to an unusual level of sharecropping called standing rent, which meant he paid Copeland to lease the land, but did not owe the landlord any of his yield beyond the rent. Diligent, resourceful, and determined, Lewis's great-grandfather did the best he could under the constraints of his time. He couldn't read or write, his great-grandson said, but he could do financial transactions in his head faster than the man on the other side of the desk could work them out with a pen and paper. Carter took great pride in just about everything he did. He would sit in his rocking chair on his porch, John Lewis recalled, and he acted like he was the king. In a way, he was, at least of the piece of the Pike County that came to be known as Carter's Quarters. It was there in 1914 that his granddaughter, Willie Mae, was born to Frank's son, Dink. In 1932, she married Edward Lewis, who had been born along with his twin sister, Edna, in 1909 in Roberta, Georgia. Eddie's mother, Lula, had come to Carter's Quarters after a separation from her husband, Henry. Willie Mae and Eddie met at Macedonia Baptist Church and fell in love. He called her Sugarfoot. She called him Shorty.